Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom Lyrica podcast. My name is Sam.
And my name is Nikki. And guess what, you guys? We have a surprise for you. We're so lucky to be here today with the incomparable Michael Hicks, author of, by my count, so correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I think you have 14 extensive, incredibly insightful, thoroughly researched articles about Joanna Newsom songs. And I just wanted to say before we start, I personally have learned so much from you, and I'm so deeply grateful for all the work that you've done into analyzing her, like, very complicated lyrics at times. This podcast would not be what it is without your contributions to those discussions. So just thank you from the get-go.
Wow. That's very sweet of you to say. And your count is probably more accurate than my count, so thanks for counting.
Yeah, I think we're at 14. So all these articles we've linked to in the show notes as we've gone through the songs in the past, but obviously we'll provide some links today. But yeah, there's a lot of them. And so we're just excited to talk with Michael, just generally about Joanna stuff.
I'm excited too. Thanks for having me.
Of course. All right. So just to, start off, how did you get started writing about Joanna Newsom stuff? What prompted you to do this?
I mean, it's kind of been like the kernel has been there for a while. And I've been listening to her music since Milk-Eyed Mender. East came out around the time I was writing my thesis. I studied English in undergrad. I was writing my thesis. I was already kind of like several steps in the door. And I wanted to change gears, and my advisor was like, no, you can't switch your subject entirely. So I had always like kind of seen it as a very, like, something deserving of academic and like rigorous, I don't know what the right word for it is, but like it would yield really interesting insight if you looked at it through critical lens or through in comparison to other literature. Like, I very quickly have seen Joanna Newsom just as, like, somebody who's writing really great literature, just happens to be alive during our time. I think over the years, like, I had kind of, scribbled down some notes on songs, Have One on Me and East, and, like, just kind of had, like, the start of things. But it wasn't until Divers came out that I like really had the urge to start writing, and I'm happy to like tell you a little bit about how that happened. But like that was really kind of when I was like, okay, now's the time to like actually write something down, make full paragraphs, and put it out there.
Yeah, God, I love that you said that it is just deserving of academic analysis, because I think that's just so true. And it, like, there's this pull from her lyrics to give it the attention that it deserves. So yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, and I'm just to like go on a tangent for a sec, like I've seen her kind of wrestling with that. Like, clearly, like, she puts a lot of work into this, but she also doesn't want her work to be seen as like only if you can deeply engage with it will it like be worthwhile. Like, there's just, I mean, there's a beauty to the music and to the yeah, just the sound of her voice and all of that. That's like, it's there, and you don't have to go any further than that to really walk away with a lot from her music.
I think that's a really tricky balance that she strikes too, is to make something that's approachable or mostly approachable for people, but then also have something that you can spend, like, we have like a year talking about one album. I know it's a lot.
I'm not surprised, but like that's a lot of dedication.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a blast.
But that's the thing, is that like you start off with Joanna songs, you start off with this like fully gratifying experience because it, like what you said, the sound and her voice and like the melody is often really compelling. But then it just has more to give if you give it that time. And I think for me personally, that's like the best kind of art, whatever it is, painting, like literature, lyrics. That's my favorite kind of thing, where if you give it attention, there's just more and more to give.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it about Divers that made you, that kind of got the ball rolling? Like, it was, and I guess, like, what was your reaction when you were listening for the first time?
Yeah. So, honestly, I don't remember the genesis of it. I've, like, perpetually been late to finding out about her new music. Like, I could tell you that at some other point, but you know, I happened upon the music video for Sapakonika, and it had probably been out for like several months at that time. And I just listened to it and was like, wow, okay, there's some stuff here. You know, I had when I was teaching English, I had taught Ozymandias I had studied it as a student. I had taught it as a teacher. Like, I love that poem, the Bysshe Shelley one, you know, that just like triggered me. And so I was looking up the lyrics to see, like, okay, just because historically I've always like heard music, and then I'll like go check the lyrics, and I was like, I didn't hear that word, and. Mm-hmm. So I went to look them up, and I happened upon some comments that were being made about it. And I felt like they were really good. Like, they certainly like got the named references, and they were like, you know, connecting the dot for somebody who maybe wouldn't go and like look up all these things in Wikipedia. But I kind of wanted to push it a little bit further. And that's, I was like, okay, but like my love of some of the poetry that's being referenced here, and then the kind of demand for depth, I just decided to jump in.
That's fascinating. And this is also one of the things that I feel like I can really learn from you with regard to like English literature knowledge. Like, there's some interview where Joanna says something like, the interviewer is like, did you hear about Ozymandias from the Breaking Bad show? And she's like, no, like Ozymandias is like this canon that people know, that people learn in school. And I'm like, listen, I didn't learn it in school. Like, I sympathize with this interviewer. And there's just a lot of like cultural references that I feel like I miss out on. And I think that your writing is super good at providing just this breadth of references, both in literature and otherwise, that I've found to be really helpful.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Fitzpatrick, my high school English teacher, not only taught it to us, but made us memorize it and recite it in front of the class. So then, of course, I inflicted that same pain on my students when I taught them. And I don't know. There's something to like really learning music by heart. I assume both of you, like I could probably say parts of Joanna's songs by heart. There's just something about that, like a really poetic poem is first and foremost musical, or a lot of the older ones are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There's something so satisfying about knowing that poem or those lyrics too. Like, I still do the same thing. If a new album comes out, I pull up the lyrics and I'm going to listen to it as many times as necessary until I have them, especially if it's something like Divers, where constantly you're like, what? What is she doing?
Okay, so then I also wanted to ask you a little bit about your article writing process, just because a lot of your articles just seem just so thoroughly researched. And in my head, I'm like, this must have taken a month, but it couldn't have, because you come out with them quicker than that. So yeah, I just wanted you to say a little bit about that and how long it takes you, what sorts of resources you normally consult. Mm.
Yeah. Gosh. Well, there's probably like an overarching like trend to how some of them get written, but I think there's also like an individual story for each of them. Like, some of them are like slow and considered, and some of them are like several all-nighters and like just a flurry of activity. Yeah, I mean, I think like so kind of in terms of things that I'm consulting, like, obviously want to read the lyrics if I can, if I have that luxury. As we're living through right now, we don't have the luxury of lyrics for any of the new things that she's been performing. But I guess kind of, yeah, the whole range of things. I love to go to the first sources, newspaper articles, kind of historical books, things that can be. And because I'm writing online, I try to make sure that I can like point to something online. So like, just, I try not to go like to my local library and dig up a bunch of stuff that I can't share online. And I'm in the world of like images that can be shared publicly. that limits sometimes the visuals that I bring into the articles. But generally speaking, I'm trying to make it so that somebody can experience the same thing online. But I do like to go to the, like, I don't love using Wikipedia or things like that. Maybe that's like an interesting jumping off point to then go find some more sources. But typically, yeah, trying to go to first sources if I can. I talk about like the process a little bit. I use some metaphors in my articles, and like those are partly like tongue in cheek and partly for real. So there's like definitely a kind of a labyrinthine mine like quality. We live pretty close to gold country here, so we're like have spent some time like poking around in that, and I think there's something to be said for like you're doing a lot of work and maybe it will yield results and maybe it won't. The cool thing about this exercise is like there are times where I'll just follow a thread and it doesn't go anywhere, but I learn a lot of interesting things along the way, and then I'll just, you know, kind of leave that on the table. And sometimes I'll follow a thread, it doesn't seem like it's going somewhere, then I'll follow another one and they connect up in really interesting ways, and then there's a third connection and a fourth connection, and then I'm like, okay, this is clearly there's some there. Yeah, I mean, I kind of tend to have like a decent amount of time researching, jotting down some notes, a lot of times I'll just kind of sit with the music and like let it percolate a little bit. And then ultimately I tend to have kind of a little bit of a scribble pad, like digital or physical, and I'll kind of have different points that I want to make in the article, and then I'll kind of map out some sort of flow between them, and then I just kind of get in and crack on with the writing. And you know, once you're in like making sentences and paragraphs, like things will come up and change my game plan, or I'll, you know, tweak a little bit, but usually things kind of follow that flow that I've mapped out.
It makes me wonder how similar it is to her own process then, right? Because I'm assuming she's also someone who doesn't you know, uses Wikipedia as a jumping off point and who does use a lot more primary sources than relying on some of the lighter stuff. I always get like a really specific visual in my head of like a library in her home or what her actual research might look like. And it is just like a flurry of papers and a flurry of art and like, you know, open
the memes
books
with
everywhere.
The red string.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
I can't remember, Michael, if I read this in one of your art, because I've been like cramming your articles for the last like 24 hours. I've read them all.
There will be a quiz
before.
At the end, Nikki.
You know, I am prepared. Not really, but don't quiz me, please. But I can't remember if you had referenced this or if this was just in my brain from some other research, but I seem to recall something about Joanna saying that she has an almost religious faith that things will connect. And so she has to keep pushing and like going down these threads as you were describing and just hoping that they connect. And yeah, as she described it, she has just this conviction that they're going to somehow, which I thought was fascinating.
I did quote that. I quoted that because it was a very validating thing for like that I found in some of her interviews where she kind of somebody was talking about research and she had a reaction to the word research and didn't really like kind of said like, well, it's kind of this like discovery process and like you know, there is a little bit of like wandering that goes on in it, and there's a little bit of you know, thinking that things will connect up and then ultimately they do and in really interesting ways. And that's part of why, like, I anticipate that there's a certain amount of criticism of my writing that is like, oh, this is not very logical, or whoa, he's out on a little bit of a limb here. And some of that, to be honest, is me trying to recreate the process of lateral thinking and like connecting dots that don't seem like they should be connected. And like, yes, like by all means, some of these things may not be what Joanna was thinking, but they're things that I've encountered and they like opened up new doors for me. And so I'm kind of taking people a little bit on a journey toward like through my brain and through my experience of discovery. And, you know, that's like, it feels quite authentic to me, but it also feels kind of fun because I wrote in that like very academic, rigorous, critical thinking, literary criticism kind of style for so long. And that was just like, that was the style of writing that was enforced and rewarded, and like other kinds of writing were like set aside. And so it's actually been kind of fun for me to not like feel a little bit hemmed in. And then it also like lets me be a little mysterious every once in a while and like not say exactly everything that I've come across. And like if people follow that thread, then they can discover things for themselves, which is kind of fun too.
Yeah, you occasionally just leave things at like the dot, 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 and then you switch topics. I'm like, Michael, you're reeling us in here. No, but as you were saying, like I was so, my mind was just blown the other day when I was reading about, what was it? The Argonaut thing that happened to line up with the new music. Like you had just followed this thread in, I think it was it Little Hand first or was it the Aragon first?
The Mine, yeah. Argonaut Mine, and then, yeah.
So if you guys don't know what we're talking about, just we'll link to the articles in the show notes. But like basically just these fucking like seeming tangents ended up, it seems like at least at face value, having a connection to a different song. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, we don't know.
I mean, there's certainly like they're like the term Argonaut has this like multiplicity to it, which is really fascinating. Whether Joanna intended it or not, like, it's related enough to be talking about, and it might take us down an interesting path. And then, like, it's also like for people who nerd out on words, like, it's just fun.
It's so fun to follow the threads that you and like the lateral thinking that you are having, and then connect it to other people's writing too, like Melissa Machuano with Blessing All the Birds, and Rachel Ward of Blessing All the Birds, Rachel Parent of Blessing All the Birds. Yeah, it's fun to take kind of those two incredible existing resources for us and then see where our brains move from there too.
Yeah.
It feels very validating for you to say that, like, you know, the journey can be rewarding in itself, just like learning about these new things. Cause I feel like that's 95% of what Sam and I are up to here is just, we go on tangents and we don't know if they have anything to do with, especially the artist's intent. But
yeah, no, I mean, and like you're, life and experience is enriched as a result of it, and like, isn't that something too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, couldn't agree more.
I see you have another question here, Nikki. Which of your articles are you most proud of? Is that something you think about, something you consider?
I don't consider it necessarily. I mean, they've all been really fun in their own way. Some of them are like much more concise, and some of them are more tangential, and some of them are I don't know, the characters along the way that you meet are more interesting or less interesting.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but you know, and then some of them have like just fun paragraphs. I think I got to write to lipomaniacal conquistadors at one point, which was
incredible.
A lot of fun.
I have this, like, for me, like, the paradigmatic Michael Hicks articles are, like, on the mathematics in, what song is that? The Things I Say. Mm-hmm. Like, I have this, like, vivid memory of being, like, almost traumatized by, like, how I had missed it, but, like, how much I thought it was really in the song with your, what's the paradox called when it gets, you can't
Zeno's.
Ever travel? Zeno's paradox, exactly, yeah. You pointing that out and me being like, oh my God, like, yes, that's so there. I was in a coffee shop supposed to be working on my dissertation, instead was delving into Michael Hicks articles. And for me, that's just like the paradigm of your articles for me personally.
I'm touched. Thank you.
Okay. So should we move into diverse themes, Sam? Do you have any other like general questions you wanted to start with?
I don't think so. Are you listening to the new music now? Are you listening to the grainy?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of the community seems to be kind of split from what I've read now. There's those who are waiting for the full arrangements, full instrumentals, and are kind of holding out for that. And then there's others who are, you know, replaying the Instagram stories or the shared the shared recordings from the show.
Yeah, I would say for somebody who's like always found out about it a little bit too late or a little later than everyone else, like it feels really fun to be, you know, I mean, I wasn't at the concert, but it feels really fun. I was a couple days late, actually, in finding out, but a couple days versus a couple months made a fun difference.
It is really fun. I also haven't been like right on board the second new music comes out. So this was the first time when new music was happening, and it was just so fun as a community to have like people sending links on Discord and people going live on Instagram and everyone just kind of being like, it's happening. It's all happening right now. Wish I could have been at the show. That would have been great, but secrets.
Do you have that Google Doc, Michael, that like people speculating on the new lyrics?
There's not the one that you not the Google Doc you sent me.
No. So there's, I'm going to share it with you after we're done. But there's this really cool document if you're interested, that has like tentative lyrics where people sort of like are amending each other's suggestions about what the lyrics could be based on what they heard. And there's just some like, and it's sort of like genius, but just a personal Google Joanna Newsom hysteria time happening. So for me, it's been really valuable and I'd be happy to share it with you.
Do you mind if you don't? Sorry.
Oh, no, of course not. Yeah.
I have like very, I'm a very, I get a little, so I had that like first genius interaction where I ran across a couple people's comments. And I get a little bit nervous that other people's interpretations of things will like color the way that I think about it. So
yeah.
It sounds a little counterintuitive, but like I almost want to like keep the shackles off my brain and then like see where I land. And then once I've like interacted enough with a song and like come to my own conclusions, I'll like open myself up a little bit. But I think like even I just to be quite honest, like out of sheer laziness, I like saw some of the trials on Genius of like people's first stab at the words, and then at some point I was like, no, I just need to like listen to this myself and come up with my own conclusions. And so but I appreciate the offer.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am just impressed with the sheer like ability to hear those recordings and to like parse out words. My ears just like don't work. I can't understand if there's not lyrics. I think it's just the recording quality that throws me off. I just can't do it.
I was gonna say it's like a whole different form of interpreting Joanna Newsom when you're just trying to like, you know, is this the word? So I've been with writing about the new work, I've been like very, what's the word for it? Like, kind of double checking my work and like making sure that I'm not going to like, I am totally going to step in it and like, we'll have to revise. I've already had to revise. There's a really cool thing about like, I had thought I heard up in Nevada and I was like, okay, north of Amador County. And then I was like, no, actually, once I ran across a little plaque in Nevada City about Emma Nevada, and I was like, whoa, wait a second. There's a person named Emma Nevada, and things kind of clicked. And there's like a whole little piece that I wrote in my article on the air again about that. But I want to make sure I'm not like totally speculating without having the full lyrics, but I'm still engaging in that for sure. And like the things that I feel a little bit more certain about. But I think a lot of the nuance will make a little bit more sense when we have the full lyrics as she is writing them or as she's written them. But yeah, because you can take something like a very different way. I don't have a good example, but like, you could be mishearing something just a little bit and it's actually the opposite of
totally. That Emma Nevada thing blew my mind. Nevada or Nevada, I never know, but that you were just walking in Nevada City and saw this and you were like, oh, this informs my understanding of like what I'm hearing in the air again. It's pretty fascinating.
Just to be extremely clear, like Nevada City is a little ways from San Francisco. It's like we were up there for our tour around the state to go see wildflowers, and it was not my suggestion that we should go there. It's my partner's, and she's not really a fan of Joanna Newsom. She appreciates my appreciation of it, but it was her idea to go there, so like I'm not some like stalking around Nevada City. Yeah. Like
it wasn't a field trip.
No, it was, yeah.
Okay, so if it's okay with you, let's get into some divers details, because I feel like that is...
Love it.
I feel like you're especially strong in that respect. So yeah, I at the risk of flattering you too much, I'm going to do it one more time here. So like one of the things that I love about your writing, Michael, is that you seem to have this ability that I struggle with to keep the big picture in your mind while getting really nitty gritty and into like a lot of detail. But I think that your writing at least gives the impression that you have an understanding, or at least like some thoughts and theories about what's going on holistically with the whole album, how the songs sort of feed into each other and themes play off of one another. So given that I feel like we sort of have a blind spot in that respect, I just wanted to invite you to say a little bit about what you think some of the big overarching themes are on Divers.
Hmm.
It's a big question.
It is. Yeah, no, and it's interesting as you were kind of talking about like, I mean, I guess we all have like our strengths and where we're stronger, where we're weaker. I was just, as you were saying that, it was like, oh yeah, that pattern matching thing is like, that's what I do for work too. So it's interesting. Like that just, I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole, but like, it's just interesting to think about how you kind of, leverage these things in your day to day and then bring it to something new. But yeah, no, so I'm definitely going to leave out major themes, like, you know, just caveat this like right off the bat. But I think some of the things that jump out to me, and this is in no like particular order, but like just making, like, what does it mean to make something? What does it mean to have an impact, to make art, to make something that lasts? They're like, I just see a lot of Joanna wrestling with her own art and making, or some narrator of herself, like reflecting, but like you kind of, pick up on enough around like, what does it mean to be making, making music, making art? I think that's a little bit why she gets so controlling in a good way of the artifact that she is creating, to really make sure that it's something that she cares about and like is a great representation of her and what she wanted to produce. And I think that like ties in interesting ways, that making process ties into individual memory, historical memory, like, and I think like very quickly kind of brings in, when we think about historical memory, like things, brings in the fact that historical memory is so dominated by a small set of people, you know, has been for such a long time, and kind of, I see her challenging that, and like, which is really healthy. And I think, the other thing that comes up for me around making is this idea of mechanization. Like there's kind of a tension between like craft and mechanized process, copying, making copies of things. And so I don't know, I just like, these things are like loosely situated for me, but like making, copying someone else's making, counterfeiting, there's definitely a, I don't know if you're familiar with Harold Bloom, the literary critic, but he had a book called The Anxiety of Influence. So I see her wrestling with that. It's basically about poets who are, their concern about the influence of prior poets. And so whenever you get into referencing Joyce and Percy Shelley and all these other people, like, you're kind of playing in that Harold Bloom, like, anxiety of influence territory. Do you want to know something really cool about that, by the way?
Yeah.
Yes. There, like, if you look it up, you can kind of, so the general premise, he kind of lays out several different kinds of anxiety of influence, if you will. And one of them is about breaking a prior artist's work into pieces and then rearranging those pieces in a way that makes something different. And the visual metaphor that he uses to describe that process is one of mosaic making. So if you break tiles down into small pieces and then you put them back together. And this blew my mind when I found it out. But the word for those mosaic pieces is tesserae. And that's the piece that, and I referenced that in the first article that I wrote about Sapochnikan. Before I had listened to anything else on the album, by the way, but I was making an explicit reference to Bloom. So he talks about tessera. That's the second type of anxiety of influence. And the word tessera is also the word to describe these, like, tokens that archaeologists have found, which are, they were kind of like admission tickets to Eleusinian mystery rites.
Whoa.
Oh my God, that is so cool.
That's incredible.
Ugh. My mind is blown too, Michael.
So I found that kind of fun.
We haven't talked about the Eleusinian Mysteries on the podcast yet, but we've both been researching it a lot. That's so cool.
Sometimes I'm like, is this Joanna or is the world just connected in these crazy right. ways totally. That like it could be either, and either one is mind blowing to me. Just
both.
Yeah, both.
I love the idea of the mosaic stuff that you were talking about, of artists having to sort of break down prior works and reassemble them into their own mosaic to try to make something sort of whatever original and lasting. And it strikes me that, like, not only is Joanna doing that by including straight up quotes from different people. So we have quotes from plaques. We have the quote from James Joyce, from Finnegan's Wake, probably some other stuff that I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
But even just like language itself is sort of that, like, that we're constrained with language is sort of just reassembling the words that we're provided with in an order that makes it unique. And I don't know, there's something really beautiful about that to me.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something ChatGPT would say about that too. You don't need to go down that rabbit hole.
Wow, super cool.
So that's one theme making. Like, I see a lot of wrestling with, like, what does it mean to make? What does it mean to copy? What does it mean to mass produce? Like, when you're making a record, there's the original and then there's the master and then there's, right? Like, so there are kind of all these record making, but also, like, writing and art and, you know, history making and all of that. That fun stuff. So that's one big theme I see. And then another one, this is going to sound like kind of trite, but like cycles. What does it mean to live? What does it mean to die? You know, the Joyce reference are obviously like, and I've been thinking about this, like, I don't have a complete thought on it, but it's so interesting that she's referencing, like, really strongly Finnegan's Wake, which itself references, but also her work, I think, references Lewis Carroll's Alice work, especially Through the Looking Glass. And those are both dream state works. And I just, like, it'd be interesting to think about Divers as, like, a dream state work. And, like, dreams are kind of that space between waking and sleeping, that space between life and death. Like, there's just something interesting around that, but I haven't fully, like, fleshed that out. And I'm also, like, kind of a little bit obsessed with that discovery I had when I realized that every title... So when you're writing poetry, making the title is kind of like an interesting act, right? There's, Like, it doesn't just, like, happen accidentally that the work gets named that. Maybe it does sometimes, but the artist is choosing to make that the title. And all of the words of the titles are sung at some point, but the word waltz is never sung in this album. And so just to me, like, there's something very unique about waltz as an additional word that she's put into the mix that would otherwise not have been spoken if you just listened to the album. So I think about, like, cycles as just an overall theme. I mean, you see me in my articles, like, talking a lot about spirals and cycles, and I'm just seeing that the imagery a lot, and then seeing the, I guess the idea of cycles as well.
That's a fascinating observation. I had no idea about that. And, like, what do you make of that? I mean, I love your point in, I'm sure it was the article on waltz, where in a waltz you end up right back in the same spot where you started, which I don't think I knew that about the dance. But do you have any view on why she would have done that? What's special about waltzing?
I don't know. I mean, there's like a three, there's a, I think it has a 3-4 rhythm to it. So it's like, I know that she's, does a lot with rhythm, like layering rhythms on top of each other. But I think to me, like the spiral or the cycle where you end up in the same place, but you're never really quite in the same place because you've gone through a journey and you've come back, like that's kind of, I think there's, like, I've run across it enough in, like, literature and thought from across people. So, like, I'm not going to say anything new here, but, like, I think it's just, it's a very interesting, it's just an interesting observation of human experience. So that's kind of why I'd like that, like, you, yes, you did dance and, like, go in a circle, but, like, something happened or could have happened in that circle. So, yes, you're in the same place, but you're not the same person, if that makes sense.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a microcosm, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I also, I as we're talking, I kind of like the idea that what we're doing in living our lives that can be sort of described as cyclical in the way that we're talking about here, that it's all just sort of a dance. It's all sort of, like, performative. It's all sort of quick. We're all just, like, busy the whole time. We're just, like, going through the motions in some kind of way. I don't know, there's something that I like about that.
Yeah, and the partnering too, like, mm-hmm. that there's somebody there with you, or some like set of people there with you. There's something interesting there too.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
I mean, I'm a big fan of dancing alone too, but, like, dancing with somebody in a waltz, I think, is probably, like, a indicative of that partnership along the way.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So that was the second theme. Tell me if I, like, need to speed it up a little bit here.
No, it's all up to you. I am loving hearing you talk about these big themes.
Yeah, the third big one that I was kind of reflecting on is around science and the notion of progress, and just, like, I think very quickly. I don't remember exactly when in my listening to the album, like, Icarus came to mind, like, very strongly, the notion of, like, you know, Icarus' story where Daedalus's father's an inventor, gives him a pair of wings, actually they both have a pair of wings, fastened to some apparatus, like bird's feathers fastened to some apparatus with wax, and they go flying off to escape. And Icarus gets just really excited about the experience of flying, and flies too close to the sun, and then falls because the wax melts, and falls into the ocean and dives and, like, drowns in the ocean. So there's, like, just something, like, with falling and diving and, just the running into enough of the situations where people felt like they were moving towards progress, or they were doing something that was moving humanity forward, but in fact they were, like, not questioning the ramifications of that. To me, that's kind of this, like, Icarus moment, if you will. Mm. And I think as much as we talk about cycles where things come back, or even time moving both ways, there may be these things that can't be undone, that you're kind of going through a one-way door, and like on the other side of that, like there's no coming back. So I think that's kind of like very pertinent to the world that we live in. And like while Joanna Newsom often creates experiences and worlds, sometimes they even evoke things way in the future or way in the past. I think she is ultimately a person living in the world that we live in. And I do think there's a degree in which her music can be a commentary on our current existence.
Yeah. For me, I feel that a lot in Waltz in particular, like her Make It Stop, My Love, We Were Wrong to Try. I feel like that sentiment really comes through there, but probably throughout the whole album too. I love that you brought that up here as a theme, because I hadn't thought to apply that concept to different songs. So that's really helpful to me personally. Do you have other big themes or?
Those were the three that really came to mind. Yeah.
These greater themes are something that I really struggle with. I find a lot more comfort in, you know, analyzing word by word and kind of like making sense of things at like the phrase level.
Which this, can be super powerful, right?
And I think it's
so
a lot
much
more
baked into each. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's very powerful, and I think it's a lot more like immediately satisfying too, because you're not, you know, tying those red strings between those giant themes. I love this idea of making and counterfeiting and copying too as a one of the more giant themes on the album. I don't think we've touched on that a lot outside of like Sepakonikin. So that'll be fun to keep in mind as we finish off the album.
Yeah, Sam and I have this running list of like things like to try to touch on the holistic themes throughout the album. We have a list of like themes that we think might be going on in each song. Like at some point Joanna described each song as kind of a love song, and so we're like stuck on that. We're like, in what way is, you know, A Pin Light Band a love song? But yeah, so these are going to be helpful to add to our list and maybe take a new approach with.
Love it. Yeah, sometimes you definitely need to just have that, like there's so much going on that just jotting down, okay, come back to this,
exactly.
Make sure you don't forget this. Yeah,
we try to keep ourselves at least somewhat accountable with some of those greater things. But even now I'm looking at the list, and one of the items on our list is Disembodied Hands, and I'm like, is this something we need to consider all of the time? Or
I feel like a lot of that comes from Michael. What was that from? Was that Sepakonikin?
Yeah.
The Disembodied
Hands,
yeah.
Hand of God.
Hand of God, that's right.
Making.
Making.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Maybe that's what we're, like, you know, ultimately trying to get at with
poking
the Disembodied
Hands.
Yeah. What was I going to ask you about just now? Oh, so in terms of larger themes, I wanted to know if you had any thoughts about movement and how movement seems to be kind of central on this album. I'm thinking of movement downwards and movement upwards. So we just obviously the diving and like, you know, the crossing the land sea barrier down into the water, and then a lot of rising too that for me at first wasn't as obvious, but in, you know, You Will Not Take My Heart Alive, we have like the rungs of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
We have what other upward movement, like maybe in Time as a Symptom, you might think of it, if your theory is that there's a death that happens, you might think there's a sort of rising,
arise,
especially
ascend.
Mm-hmm. Say it again.
Arise, ascend.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Arise, ascend. Exactly. Do you have any views on like the significance of that? Is it just, does it play into the cyclicalness or?
Yeah, I was going to say it's like immediately, I haven't thought too much about that, but immediately like my mind goes to the cycles, like in order to go down you must go, like what up what goes up must come down. There's definitely a movement. You know, I like one of my very very like loose tangents is around like hot air balloons and the like beginnings of flight, parachutes, all of that. So there's like a little bit of yeah, I've definitely like thought about that in opposition to the diving or the falling. But yeah, I don't have any like immediate reaction to it.
That's perfect. Speaking just tangentially really quickly about diving / falling, I like my mind was blown and I just immediately ran out to my partner and was like, listen to this cool little tidbit here. I forget again what article this was in, probably your James Joyce article, but when you had mentioned, I think it was Jung's comments on James Joyce and his daughter. So his daughter, who had like a pretty tragic life from my understanding, she ended up you know, in like straitjackets and died at a mental institution. Is that what it was? Yeah. And Jung's description of the two of them was that both are like plummeting towards the bottom of the river. One is diving and the other one is falling. I was like, oh God, the beauty of that metaphor. But I love how you bring it up in the context of this album. It seems really poignant.
Thanks. Yeah, no, that was definitely one of those things that like shook me. And again, like to your point, is everything connected because the world is connected? Probably. But yeah. does somebody like Joanna Newsom write about James Joyce without knowing that he has a daughter? Probably not. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So I had a question here. I had a question here about whether you think that she has intent when you're describing all these cool connections, like whether you think she actually had them in mind or whether you're just sort of going out on different limbs. But I feel like you've already addressed that. And maybe your answer is it depends. But do you have anything more to say on that point?
So, I because you were asking about this, I like went and dug up a quote from her about reading people's interpretation of her work, which I found like both validating and like very true. this was in I can send you the link to it. This was in an Under the Radar interview, and I'll just read it. It says, sometimes, and the writer put in brackets, interpretations are shockingly close to what I intended, where I'm like, do I know you? She says. And other times they are delightfully and completely different, but making such a convincing case for this alternate meaning that meaning that I'm almost believing it myself. And I was like, yep, check. Yeah.
It's like, as you said, I find that validating and like kind of embarrassing at the same time. Like,
yeah. And I was thinking, I mean, like I was saying, I think, you know, first and foremost, like what I'm trying to do is write what it evokes for me. And then I think, just kind of taking people a little bit on that journey and like seeing where you land, like just to like give you an example of like something that's a little out there. But like the thought process or the exploration process for me, like kind of writing about Sapochnik again, I've got Rags being mentioned 100%. I've got 20,000 being mentioned, and I've like, you know, I won't get into details about it, but like I've got the March of the 20,000 in this same vicinity in New York. And then I've got the notion of sonnets because of Ozymandias and the other Ozymandias. And so, like, and then, of course, all the context of the Ozymandias poem, especially the, at least the more evocative one for me is the, well, actually both of them are pretty evocative of the notion of, like, former glory and fallen current state. And one of the things, like these large statues, right, of rulers or what have you, to me, that's like immediately evoking the Colossus of Rhodes, which like stood over the harbor of Rhodes, one of the, you know, great seven wonders of the world, no longer exists. And then like I'm thinking about the entrance to New York and New York Harbor and the Colossus of the Statue of Liberty, Lady Liberty. And at least, remind me, both of you are Canadian, is that right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I live in New York, but I'm in New York State.
So, okay, yeah, so, and, but like the, you know, most Americans can kind of rattle off part of the poem from the Statue of Liberty, give me your tired, et cetera. And that's a poem written by Emma Lazarus. So like, I kind of, and it's a sonnet, and it's the new Colossus. And like, it just, to me, like, that thread is very clear in my mind. Whether it's clear for Joanna, I don't know by any means. Now, where things get a little bit weird is like, I'm like, okay, Emma Lazarus, you know, who wrote these things about workers' rights and so forth, right? So she's kind of this interesting character in all of this. Not terribly well known in a song about women who have been kind of forgotten. And I'm like, okay, Lazarus. Now I'm like, that's like the weird leap, right, is going from her last name to the Lazarus in the Bible, who is like Jesus, you know, raises him out of the cave. And so like, those are like the weird connections. But then when I get to eventually listening to Time is a Symptom and I hear a cave, a grave, arise, I'm like, okay, yeah, this means other things too. But like, I don't know, I feel validated by that. Or maybe that's just the like very convincing, and you know, if I can convince Joanna Newsom that she also meant that, then awesome.
Then you've won.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's so cool. So freaking cool. What a, like, I can't imagine you upon like making that connection and, you know, hearing those echoes in Time as a Symptom. Do you just do that thing that Joanna does, jump up and cuss and act like a football player?
It's not quite that physical. Mentally, I'm doing some victory laps or something. Like, whoa. It's more astonishment than anything else most of the time.
Yeah.
But then there are definitely references that I feel like much more, that may not be like on the surface really obvious, but like are much more, I feel more confident that they're intentional, like a couple, you know, like my exploration of the word undarked and the story behind that, Zeno's paradox, Humpty Dumpty is like a critical feature of, so like when I came across that and then also the connection to Finnegan's Wake, I feel pretty good about that. Endless knots, like the concept of endless knots, the image that I used in one of the articles, I think it was around waltz, that I wrote about endless knots, actually it's from the Book of Kells, but then I've now come across examples of like copies of Finnegan's Wake that have that exact image on them, and I just was like, okay, somebody's making the connection here between the Book of Kells and this particular image of endless knots. So those are like, there's some that I feel like much, they're not like just name checked in the songs, but I feel like that they were probably pretty likely part of her thought process or discovery process in some way.
Right. Speaking of Finnegan's Wake, just for a second, because I had a question later on about Finnegan's Wake, but like, how do you know so fucking much about the most confusing book that I've ever like deigned to maybe read? And two, can you help me? Give me some tips on how to read this.
Can you give me just a second to, I'll be right back.
It's a great question. Hmm. I meant to check if there was an audiobook, but I don't think that'll even help my...
I've heard people write it, so I went to Audible and checked, and I've heard people write that, like, the audiobook actually helped them because it's such a, like, melodic, like, he makes up words, and so reading the words are actually sort of hard, but if you hear someone say them, it sounds more like, you know, the actual words. Oh, my God! Are those all Finnegan's Wake?
Yeah, and I forgot to bring them into the closet with me, but, so... This is Finnegan's Wake, and I literally chopped it into pieces.
Oh.
And this is Joseph Campbell's and Henry Morton Robinson's book called A Skeleton Key to Finnegan's Wake. And this was like, you know who Joseph Campbell is?
From your writing.
The hero with a thousand faces, kind of... character who like George Lucas and Star Wars, okay. Like consulted him for the story of Luke Skywalker. It's just kind of like become kind of seminal work around mythology and shared mythologies between different cultures. But this was kind of his first like work that he did when he was pretty young. Was like, I'm reading Finnegan's Wake like very soon after it came out, and I'm gonna write a book about like what it means and what the references are and what have you. So my first tip, I guess, would be have a copy of this.
Okay.
The tip about slicing the book up is just if you're a practical person and like don't want to carry around two tomes at any given time. That worked really well for me. I got tired of carrying these both in my backpack. But I was catching you saying like, yes, the whole like try reading it aloud. Like the sound of it, it's extremely melodic. And if you can get your hands on, there are a couple of recordings out there of people reading, especially if you find like Irish people reading it, or Joyce. There are some recordings of him reading sections. It's just incredible to listen to. And I think it starts to, this gets into another tip, but like hearing the melody of it, you start to hear other expressions that if you were just reading the words on the page, you wouldn't necessarily, if you have like any, I've heard one that's like, it sounds like, if you're familiar with the Our Father, from Catholicism, like it sounds like some of the expressions in that, but it's not the same words. But it like you start to hear like different layers of meaning on top of things, and they're not always, the words aren't always spelled the way that the actual word that you're hearing is spelled, but you hear that and you see something else. So he's definitely playing on that quite a bit. But I think it can be extremely intimidating for people, and that's why I think like listening to sections goes a long way. And then I think the other stuff, like there's a little bit of just like getting into the right Zen mindset. Like, don't try to understand everything that's going on with the book. And maybe even don't try to read the whole book.
Okay.
Maybe just read some sections, like deep read a section or two, like get like nerd out on the multi-layered references of that section. But then like maybe the rest of it, listen to an ebook read it lightly every once in a while. Yeah. And then I think there are some, like, there are probably some resources out on the internet because they're like each word might have like multiple references in it. And if you're somebody who like likes that kind of help in the moment, I bet there'd be some like good resources for it.
I think there's not a dictionary.
Yeah.
I think there's a dictionary that exists.
A Finnegan's Wake dictionary?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, I have that saved somewhere.
Oh, that's really cool.
Like, you was also considering it, but was also like, oh boy, okay, it's a lot to carry on my bike to go.
Even just in the title itself is intimidating to me because I learned there's no apostrophe, and so it's not the Wake of Finnegan. It's Finnegan's, the plural, like people wake up. And then in reading your, like you quoted just the last bit where the Away Alone at Last gets referenced in Joanna, and you quoted like the chunk of text that's from. And in that it says Finn, comma, again. And I was like, oh my God, like Finnegan is just like Finn. It's already referencing cycles. And this is literally the title of the fucking book. Like, it's so intimidating to me, but really compelling for that reason. Like, it feels like there is a lot there. Just scared of it.
He intended there to be like everything there, so
yeah.
He's also, if you've read Ulysses or any of his other works, he's definitely a big, like, he makes an epic out of the ordinary. So there's like, there's also just like a very common, very like everyday element to the story, which I think if you understand that and recognize that, and like Campbell does a good job kind of explaining like what's happening in the plot here, I think that goes a long way as well, as like just understanding how he's like bringing the epic to the everyday and vice versa.
That's really cool. As you're saying that, I'm curious to explore ways in which Joanna might do that too, in terms of, I don't know, talking about domesticity, and I'm thinking particularly at the end of Anecdotes when she, I think this is Melissa Martirano's point from Blessing All the Birds, but I think that there might be some sort of theme happening where she brings these like crazy time traveling war themes right back down to like the everyday moments at home, sitting around at a table, in this very gendered way too, potentially, right? Melissa Martirano writes a lot about the like feminine coded having to stay put and the masculine coded being able to go out and do exploring. Yeah. And so I am curious to explore parallels there too.
Yeah. And I think like that sort of scene around the table too, to me is kind of evokes the way that like we're going about our everyday lives and like kind of having these domestic experiences, but then we're also carrying maybe the baggage or the memories of more shocking moments of our lives that have occurred. But yeah, I won't claim to have read like the exhaustive amount of really great writing that Melissa and Rachel have put out there, but have read some of it and like they're doing a, like it's a very admirable and very impressive project, and like Joanna Newsom is such a feminist at the core, like, and I hope that comes out in my work too, but like I feel like Rachel and Melissa are much better equipped to speak to that in a more like direct way, and I always feel a little bit less on sure footing with that, so almost kind of just offer some deference and appreciate what they're doing with that. That tension definitely comes across in a lot of her work, and I think the heroicism of that feminine experience, the way that she elevates that, is really mind-boggling for me in a great way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fully agree with the admiration for Blessing All the Birds folks. They're amazing. But I do think that feminism comes through in your writing too, especially in Sapochonic and stuff. I definitely felt that coming through.